Optics that'd be real good.
Yeah.
Get into Alaskan politics next time.
Alaskan politics now on the local level.
You're gonna go local and you're just gonna build it up like that. You're take Alaskan politics out of this.
Okay.
On the statewide situation, we have Republican, Democrat, the party for independence of Alaska, the Libertarians, and then there also is a slate of independence. So there's quite a fragmenting of the political scene. This always occurs, the fragmenting, but more often than not, the splinter groups don't amount to much. Once in a while, a splinter group will have enough support that it becomes a major feature within a given time period and a given geographic area. It's more true in other countries than in our country. If you think of France and Italy having a multitude of parties, they have a great difficulty in organizing their government because of the necessity of forming coalitions in order to get a majority. Occasionally in the Alaska legislature, there has been, since statehood, to the best of my recollection, there have been three legislatures that have struggled with the matter of organizing in order to determine which party is going to organize the House or Senate. There have been crossovers mostly on the Democrats, conservative Democrats that have sided with the Republicans, and in that way the Republicans wound up organizing the House. It's not a good situation in the legislature to have an even number of representatives or senators. It's too bad the Constitutional Convention didn't make it so there was an odd number. In that way, it would be almost certain that there would be a majority of one party or the other, unless, of course, there was an independent or a splinter party.
As you look around you here, just where you live, what sorts of things do you see that are involved with politics?
Well, the school situation is somewhat political. The highway department is somewhat political. The post office department is somewhat political.
The
school situation now is definitely political in the sense that the district is pushing, that is, the superintendent in the district is pushing for the formation of a third class borough in order to get larger revenues through property taxation. And certainly this is a political thing. It's ostensibly for the benefit of the school, but it nevertheless is a political decision and will be, it's a political process and it'll be a political decision whether there will be a third class borough formed for the school district or not. The the election of school board members is political. It isn't a party thing, to the best of my knowledge. Nobody that's run for the school board has run as a Democrat or Republican. As far as I know, none has expressed it, and I don't think it has had any great significance whether the board member is Republican or Democrat, but that's party, but it's nonetheless a political thing. As far as politics in the classroom or in the administration of the school district, I don't think it occurs. If it does occur, I'm not aware. That is, it doesn't make any difference whether a teacher or administrator is Democrat, Republican, or neither, or is aligned with some independent party or splinter party. I don't think that cuts any ice at all. It could in some instances. Not too long ago, the Fairbanks North Star School District was heavily slanted towards Baptist teachers because the superintendent of schools was Baptist, and he hired a lot of Baptist teachers, and as a result, it was heavily Baptist in Fairbanks. And if there was a school superintendent that had strong feelings about political parties, he could load his staff that way too. And the superintendent has a pretty broad powers, and the board can go along or oppose his actions, but he has a lot of authority and power.
How about the post office?
Well, the post office has been traditionally a patronage thing. It isn't here in Manly Hot Springs.
The postmaster has served the party or something.
Yes, he's either served the party or he's appointed by or at the recommendation. Used to be that way. That it was appointed by the recommendation of the party that was in power at the time. There's been an attempt to reduce this, and I don't know how much it has succeeded. In reality, the thing was as often not a source of detriment to the man who was making the selection, because it was inevitable that there would be people that would be disappointed, and he would be the goat, and he would acquire political enemies because he had recommended one person for the postmastership and not others. So it's inevitable that there would be people that he would alienate, and he would lose votes for that. And I think that most of the representatives and senators were glad to shed this burden.
How about amen? How's it just Mr. Joseph?
Well, until the most recent one, it was kind of handed down. It was almost sold from one person to another.
Sold?
Yeah. The postmastership. Like when Rose de Lima got it, they bought the house from Benson, and part of the deal was essentially that the postmastership would go with the house.
Well, how did Bob Lee get it?
Well, Rose de Lima decided she didn't want to be postmaster anymore, and she resigned, and the postal department put out a ruling, or it was a ruling that this was not going to be a regular post office anymore, that the postmaster would not be a member of the civil service with all its benefits and so on. It was to be kind of a contract affair, and you bid on it. But the time was so short, I'm told, I don't know. Anyway, they did not change as they said they were going to, so Bob Lee is indeed in the civil service. And it is not a contract, post office.
What kind of benefits are there for a person in the postmaster?
Oh, their retirement and the leave, so much leave. And of course, there's the regular rate of pay according to the type of post office. And I don't know what all is involved.
Okay. Speaking about Alaska politics, today the Supreme Court overturned that Judge Moody's ruling. What do you think about all that?
I think it was an inevitable decision on the part of the Supreme Court. It appalled me and surprised me that Moody came up with a decision that he did. It seemed to me that he did not consider all the ramifications, but this is just, as a layman, I don't know what the legal aspects are, but I just couldn't see how Moody could have come up with the decision that he did. And it seems to me eminently reasonable that the Supreme Court came up with the decision that they did.
What did you not like about Moody's decision?
Well, he did not find any evidence of corruption or bribery. The only evidence that that came up was that some of the procedures were handled in a slipshod way. They may have tried to call me and.
Well, what is your reaction to people who say politics, I don't want to have anything to do with it, or it's all corrupt, or people who just kind of feel like they aren't involved with politics and don't want to be involved?
Well, I can understand how they feel, and there are different reasons for different people not being very politically aware of. One of them is sheer laziness, and certainly I fall in this category too. It takes effort to maintain political awareness and to concern yourself with issues. What most of us would like to do is kind of have a father in politics, in that sense that we would turn over our political destiny to a man that we had complete trust in, that would handle things to our best advantage and not bother us. I think this is essentially, we vote for a father figure for president, and to a lesser degree, our governors and representatives are this way. But there are very few people that actively concern themselves with the functioning of government, which is extremely important to all of us. When you consider that as much as one third of our working effort goes for taxes of one sort or another, we are indeed heavily interested. What we are in effect doing when we elect people, we're saying, you spend our tax money the best way you know how to benefit me or to benefit us, but we don't really follow through on it. We sometimes vote against somebody because they've done something that we don't really like, or we will vote for somebody that he has done something politically or said he's taken a stand on some issue that we favor, or he's expressed a philosophy that we find generally agreeable. We'll vote for that person. But it's rare that any of us follow through and let our wishes be known once a man is in office. It's even rarer if you do request that a representative or senator support a given situation or position, that if he has indeed been successful, that there is a word of praise or a letter written to that person to commend him for his actions. Most politicians, even those that I don't like, are badly treated by the public, really badly treated, in that their efforts are not appreciated by those people that they're working most for. They go without much recognition that they are due. And as far as cheating in politics, and that is men in politics or people in politics that use their positions to feather their own nests for their own personal advantage, I think this is not that common. It's true that there are men that do take advantage of the situation, but it's much improved over what it was 100 years ago. Even with the notorious situation with Nixon and Agnew and Bobby Baker and the Tungsten Park and these, the most recent ones, these, I believe, maybe I want to believe, are more the exception than the rule. I do believe that most men that go into politics are motivated by principle rather than avarice. They may also be motivated by ego and wanting the adulation and the recognition of the crowd. But I do believe that most of them are basically honest.
Well, you talk about people wanting a father figure. Do you think people ever want a mother figure in office?
maybe it's maybe, but I haven't thought of this. I don't think mother figures are our concept of mother is not one of power and distribution of wealth and privilege. Our concept of mother is more of love and caring and nurturing. So but
what do you think that means for women in politics?
I don't know. Now maybe I'm backed myself into a corner here. I feel that women are very much into politics and are very capable in political decisions. Certainly, they are as capable as men. There is no sexual division, as far as I'm concerned, on the abilities of women to perform very well in political office and in high political office. We have the most recent examples in the persons of Golda Meir and Indira Gandhi. And the lady that's the head of government in Sri Lanka. Women that are very intelligent and capable and certainly are as adept as males. But I really don't know how people think of them in terms of mother figure, father figure. This is more what would you say? Not a gut reaction, but an emotional feel rather than one based upon an analysis of politics. But it's also true that whether be it man or woman, a person that is physically attractive and is has grace and humor and a lot of characteristics that we all find attractive in people. With those same characteristics in a politician, he has a tremendous advantage over one that who may be more intelligent and have better training, better education, but lacks the charisma. He has a tougher time in establishing himself in politics. Because a lot of it is, it's almost a personal relationship. That doesn't mean that an ugly person or an unattractive person or a people with characteristics that are less than desirable don't make good politicians. Sometimes some of the things that would ordinarily detract can move a person to strongly enough to overcome them, and does indeed overcome them. Even such a simple thing as a name can have a tremendous significance politically. People with strange names sometimes have an advantage in exploiting the strange name.
Uh, one thing, as you're talking, about the relative advantages of men or women in the political system, due probably to the socialization of people the last few generations. Do you find more instances of, inequalities, social inequalities among the sexes that you would notice, say, commonly around you, that perhaps would be interesting to point out?
Well, certainly there is still a sizable segment of the population that feels the woman should be in the home. And so express it concerning women that are running for public office. Dixie Dale was an active worker for Mike Dalton this summer, and she ran into it repeatedly right here in Manly Hot Springs. I mean, people that said it made no bones about hiding it, that a woman just shouldn't be in politics. And there is a feeling by quite a segment of the population that this is true, but there's also a segment of the population that feels this is true about natives and or about blacks. It's a prejudice that they have, and they're not going to shake it. Or about religion, in spite of Kennedy's overcoming that big barrier, there are still a lot of people that feel strongly about the religious affiliation of the candidate. That a lot of them don't say anything about it, but they still feel it. And I think it's unfortunate, but it's a political reality.
A few days ago when we were talking, you were talking about some of your feelings regarding prejudice against natives or feelings that native people might have about whites. This is another long conversation. Would you like to say anything about that?
Well, I think you may be thinking about what I had said about how people, or how I react when I'm called a gussock by a native. It hasn't happened that often to me. And when it has, when I am the object of anti-white feelings, or the expression of those feelings, it doesn't really bother me that much, because I don't feel that they are directing their antipathy towards me as Chuck Dart, but as white man. And considering all of the harsh things that have been said and done to natives and blacks and other minorities, I can understand where they're coming from, and it doesn't bother me as much as it might if I didn't know this. In fact, it's amazing to me that more minority people aren't bitterly and actively expressing themselves towards members of the white race for what we have done ever since Columbus set foot in the New World. So although I'm sorry that these things have accumulated, and that there are some individuals that feel they must express this hatred and bitterness, I can certainly understand it. I don't like it, and I'm I regret that it occurs, but I can also be very sympathetic with the person expressing the feeling. I can be more sympathetic towards that person if it's directed at somebody else besides me, but...
Do you feel that there may be a more effective outlet for those feelings?
You mean more constructive? There may very well be, but I think the release of those feelings is or can be constructive too. That I think that the emotional release that the person gets can be beneficial to that person, and hopefully as they go through life, it will lessen rather than increase, and that there will be greater understanding. I think that there is greater understanding, and that it will continue to be that way. I think that there is more freedom to express these feelings of antagonism and bitterness than there has been earlier. I think the feelings have been there, but there's greater freedom to express it now. If you can think of in terms of the black situation, which we're much more removed from here than natives, it might be easier to see it. That certainly in my time, I have heard so many guys say that that's the way blacks want it. You know, they did want segregation, and they didn't want to be in the same schools, and they didn't want to mix with the mainstream of whites. They didn't want to use the white facilities. Well-meaning people would say this, but they were totally ignorant of how the majority of the black people felt. I'm sure that there were very few black people that wanted to be discriminated against. I was unaware for a long time that blacks had a derogatory name for whites. And it puzzled me that they didn't have. I thought of this. Why is it that blacks don't have a name that's derogatory for whites? But I certainly have learned that they do have.
What do you see as the future for women as sexual minorities to become, in the near future, in interior Alaska, just in more local kind of a scene?
Oh, I think it's been a big leap forward in the status of women as far as equality is concerned. And I look to see continuing improvement in women's position. Here again, there will be diehards that will go to their graves opposing women's equality and women's rights and their rights as individuals and as members of the human race. But I think these people are on the decline rather than the increase. And I have a strong feeling that we are becoming more enlightened. Maybe I'm living in a fool's paradise. But
do you notice things like that happening here in Randall?
Yeah, I do. I think all of us males have been made aware that we have unjustly treated women in various aspects of our lives and their lives. You'd have to be pretty cement-headed not to be aware of this and to recognize it. That doesn't mean that we act completely impartially and don't maintain some of our poor habits and thought patterns, but I do think that there's a general trend toward enlightenment in most all aspects of women's situation and condition.
How about you yourself? Right now, Gladys is in Ruby teaching, and you're here at home. Maybe you can describe what you do and how you spend your time in ways that it may or may not have been different from 10 or 20 years ago. Or maybe you don't want to do that.
can pick and choose, but anyway, the idea to show a contrast of, of this procedure, this thing you're talking about, is people becoming more enlightened as to roles.
For instance, you had a bunch of people over for dinner last night, and you cooked a fantastic meal, you know?
Testimonial, right.
Let's have a testimonial. Oh. Hallelujah.
Well, I know for some people it's a threat, or for some men it's a threat to their sense of masculinity to do what is traditionally a female function, such as cooking or cleaning the house or taking care of kids. But and this is a this is something that I don't feel any concern about. Once in a while, somebody walks in and sees me doing dishes and make a comment on it. But what the hell? Somebody's got to do the dishes. And it isn't that I enjoy doing them. But it's got to be done. And I don't feel any stigma to attached to any form of labor that's has honor and dignity to it. Anything that is constructive and productive, whether it's done by male or female, it has honor and dignity to it. Those things that are destructive to self or others, I feel kind of strongly about in some areas. Specifically in the drug pushing. I could never be a drug pusher. And I'm thinking of alcohol and tobacco as well as cocaine and dope and the so-called harder drugs. But I have I would much rather be looked down upon for doing dishes or cooking or cleaning the house, which I don't do very well, than selling cigarettes or booze to people that shouldn't have it. Yeah. So maybe I'm not as liberal as I look.
Is this do you think your attitude this way is uncommon in many aspects?
No, I don't really. There are many men that in Manly Hot Springs that cook for themselves, and some that cook for their wives. There have been a few here. I was surprised to learn that the man gets up and makes breakfast. for the wife. I was, this kind of surprised me, you know, because I was brought up in a household where unless the wife was very ill, she got up and prepared breakfast for the husband and the family. It was a traditional role, and in fact, I don't know, but I'm assuming that most everybody in that little town that I lived in, most every wife, I should say, did indeed do that. It was a point of gossip where a woman didn't do that.
Why do you suppose you haven't carried on that tradition?
Well, I think probably out of more liberal and less stereotyped viewpoint on things in general. As I said earlier, my mother, in trying to encourage us to learn how to cook, she told us that it won't hurt you to know, and sometimes it will come in handy. But I wasn't interested in cooking, and what I learned was learned with a good deal of force and reluctance. It wasn't because I was eager to.
How did Gladys take all this?
Well, Gladys does a lot of things that would be considered by some people as being masculine spheres of labor. Like she will eagerly work the planting potatoes or farming. Of course, many farm wives, and she grew up in a farm situation. Many farm wives shared the male occupations of the farm, but the husbands did not share the female occupations of the farm. And it's true, I mean, you might not want to recognize it, but in many farm households, the wife worked alongside the husband in the field, and then she, when she got to the house, she prepared the supper and did the dishes and cleaned up while he rested. And consequently, the wife was doing more than her share of the farm work. And I'm afraid in many instances throughout the world, this is true, that women have taken a disproportionate share of the burden of work. Certainly not always, but particularly in less industrialized countries, that this is true. In industrialized countries where the husband goes off to a job and works for 8 or 10 hours a day, and with the modern conveniences that are in the home these days, it may be true that there are many husbands that work much harder than the wives in terms of physical labor, and also in terms of hours devoted to maintaining the family. But where kids are concerned, the wife and mother has traditionally had much more of the responsibility and the work. There's no question about it. In this country, it's particularly noticeable the strain on young mothers with two or three small children in a small home. They're tied to those little kids because the little kids have to have continual care and observation. And the in the winter time, in cold weather, the mother